Welcome to the APCDA podcast. This is your host, Ruchira Tripathi, and you're listening to the Voice of Industry. Today is the last episode of season three. This will be a mixed episode where we will talk about the podcast season and some trends related to career choices and skill development. I have with me fellow APCDA members, Sujata Ives, Elizabeth Montgomery and Lilia Kliukanova as guests on the show. Please note that the views expressed on the podcast are that of my guests and are not reflective of their organizations. Welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you. Hi, Ruchira.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Sujata, Elizabeth, and Lilia, to give context to our listeners, could you share with us a little bit about your background? Like, where are you based? What do you do? And who are your clients?
Sure.
Do you want to go first, Elizabeth or Sujata, whoever?
Oh, sure. Since you called my name first, I'll go first. I'm so happy to be here, Chira. I have 25 years of experience in education and business sector. Through being a military wife, I have had 18 moves, and I've lived on three different continents. So I've seen a lot, I've heard a lot, and I have a great passion to help people in different cultures. I myself am from a different culture, although I live in the United States. I was born in India. So anyways, currently, I love being co-chair of APCD's program committee with Elizabeth. So I'll put a pause there. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Sujata. Yes, it's really, I'm going to say 25 years plus for myself because, and I, my region is really, I say the Pacific Rim because I work in mainland China and also in San Francisco and the east, the west coast of the United States. And I thought back, what struck me is I began as a youth employment director. I began my work at Jane Addams Hull House in Chicago, which was focused on community economic development of low-income people in the neighborhoods of the North Shore of Chicago. And from there, I did the same thing when I moved to San Francisco. I was an enterprise director in the homeless and youth centers of the Tenderloin in San Francisco. So my background was really based on a lot of scrappling kind of work that I had to do to help people find jobs. And then I switched out from that for a while, but I ended up in China for almost 20 years. And I was working full-time in the Chinese public schools, and I later became a senior advisor to internationalize the curriculum of the Chinese public schools, which was quite an honor. I think and what it came for me became very clear was that the concept of careers was quite different in the culture, and that got me extremely interested. And I began doing research on the cross-cultural aspect of the world of work.
Hi, I'm Lilia Tlyukinova, and I'm based in Astana, Kazakhstan, and I have about 19 years of experience in higher education, and currently I'm working at the Korean Advising Center of Nazarbayev University. I am a certified career consultant, career coach, and a proud member of APCDA. My role involves assisting students in understanding their career path, making informed decisions, and collaborating with employers and alumni.
Thank you, Lilia, Elizabeth, and Sujata. So one of the reasons why we started the current season Voice of Industry was to bring career practitioners closer to the developments taking place in the world of work and to guide the clients better. I'm actually curious to know from all of you, what kind of information or factors are important to your clients when they are making career decisions? And the reason I ask this is because I recently came across a study of millennials in Asia by Universum and INSEAD. And it talks about how there has been a shift and where this group, when I say this group, I'm talking about the millennials, they are making decisions based on cultural fit and not prestige, which is what they used to do traditionally. So are you seeing this in your practice as well? And how are clients making career decisions in your countries? Elizabeth, do you want to go first?
Sure. Thank you. And it's so wonderful to be here with my colleagues and Ruchira. Yes, what you just brought up is really the key, that in China, the career decisions that were once made for children by family members, sometimes the government would actually say, oh, well, we need more accountants, so you have to be an accountant, even if they wanted to be something else. That's rapidly changing because parents are now more educated and more informed about options for their children's career. The influence of the one-child policy in China for many, many decades has had a very important effect on that. And students must choose their major by 10th grade in China. And so high school has been shifted to a kind of an experimental speed up of their career motivations and interests. And it's a choice between science and arts and science studies. So basically, due to some other issues of extremely high unemployment right now, the students are more motivated in a competitive society already. Imagine you have, well, you know, in India, but over 1 billion people, the competition is really extreme. And so there's a segment of China's young people that are actually even opting out in some ways from the rat race and the working so hard 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., 6 days a week, and some of the inequities that they found through gender opportunities and things like that have given them Chinese a different, more lifelong look at their careers. And it's quite an exciting time, but as you say, it's extremely changing. And it's also changing not only on the young people's end, but also from the population of huge numbers of elderly who are living in China, who are now, once they were just retirees, and now they are looking to extend their employment and their activities well into their 80s and 90s.
Wow.
Yeah.
What's happening at your end, Sujata? Is that something that's happening with your clients as well?
Very much so, Ruchira. You know, they realize their stage in life. In higher education, these college kids, they know that the centers are there. They come to us, career practitioners. And their first goal is, I want to make a lot of money. So, you know, and that shows their stage in life, doesn't it? But due to their student loans or such, this is, you know, an important point to them. So because of how they're putting things, we start with goal setting first. That becomes a very important first step for short-term and long-term goals. there we have wonderful centers also for returning citizens that are, you know, have offended. And these are run by Department of Labor. So most of my clients now, since I'm in private practice, are transitioning people that they want more guidance in perhaps that their career transitioning, or they've, you know, gotten themselves in the middle of the scale downs. So we do, though, to answer the specific point of millennials, there is a shift in millennial decision making. We see a huge shift because their values have changed. And these values have shifted from materialism to more family values. And this is because of the pandemic. So we see this workplace shift. We see the great resignation because they're looking for something more. The pandemic and loss of their family members or neighbors or friends made them realize that taking care of aging parents, their children, their pets became more important than materials. So they are seeking hybrid jobs now. Now, bosses, they want people to come back into the buildings because they have to pay for the rent and the heating and the cooling. But the millennials are resisting. So I want to say that this is taking quite a bit of change at the systemic level. So leaders will have to look for new business models and new leadership models that are more empathetic.
And I would like to add about the career decisions in Kazakhstan. In Kazakhstan, career decisions have often been influenced by family expectations. There is a prevalent trend where young people pursue undergraduate and master's degrees before entering the workforce. It's interesting to note that the common themes of work-life balance and entrepreneurial mindset among the millennial generation in Kazakhstan, and these trends are consistent with broader global trends among millennials. But the local context and cultural influences in Kazakhstan play an important role in shaping the career choices of this generation. And additionally, we now observe global career trends, with IT majors being particularly popular.
Thank you. There's also a lot of talk about skills-based hiring. And, you know, it's become especially relevant because of the rapid changes that are taking place. I think Sujata also spoke about some of the changes with respect to the great resignation, the change in values that have taken place because of the pandemic. And also, of course, we have the tech changes. And one of the things is that the degree programs that we have currently, they are not able to keep up with these changes because, you know, so much is changing. And by the time the young person graduates, probably that degree itself is kind of obsolete. So we have this issue. And then on the other hand, we have emerging sectors like renewable energy, who do not have established feeder degrees to kind of, or feeder programs, broadly speaking, to enter into the industry. I remember having this conversation with Vignesh, one of the guests on the show, and we were talking about renewable energy. And he was speaking about the difficulty of bringing in talent into the sector as they did not have the right background, which includes, you know, not just the education, but also with respect to the skills. This basically brings me to micro credentials, which are becoming quite the trend, and they can in some way address this gap that I'm kind of talking about. My question is, how can job seekers or even experienced professionals be smart about selecting some of these micro credentials that are on offer?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'll take that question first, because so currently I'm building an online academy, and I've been working on the subject of micro credentials for about 3 weeks right now. So it's a very big buzz on micro credentials. And I think for me, I'm looking at the human micro credentials. So we're talking about courses in creative problem solving and intercultural fluency and initiative and oral communication, empathy, as Sujata mentioned, all of those, resilience. And I think that that is great. And then we have the technology micro-credentials, and they're so vast. Of course, AI has swept the world, but also SQL, and which is structured query language, that's at the top of the list for many, many people who know how to program or not. And edge computing is all about processors that are coming so fast and generating so much information, and they're right next to you. You know, these used to be in, you know, a bunker somewhere in the Arctic, and now they're really speeding up and the results are in real time. So I think these micro credentials are very important for keeping ahead of the ever-changing software industry and infrastructure. And when you're talking about green in particular, because it does include the, you know, satellite technology and many, many new information systems that are looking not only from space at the Earth, but also looking from Earth at Earth and what is going on for so many problems, firefighting. So these credentials are they should be highly regulated, as you're saying. So in some ways you have to be very careful and know where they're coming from. In China, they're very regulated. Mostly the micro-credentialing is an entire new way of going to school. You have your BA, but you're also getting these micro credentials in college.
But how should people select some of these? Because one of the things that I found, especially with the younger generation, I mean, of course, for the older generation, you have a set path, and then you have, if you are to do the credentials, you will have some guidance or framework in order to, you know, select. But with the younger generation, they are basically, what I've realized is, following the herd, that, you know, my friend is doing this, so let me just go ahead and, you know, get that credential. So could you advise on, like, maybe a more structured way or a logical way in which they can go about in selecting some of these credentials?
You know, as Elizabeth said, micro-credentials are specific to the needs of the business. You know, what is the employer looking for? So the degree that the person has, whatever course of study the person has taken, that is an excellent start, right? Because most of the job descriptions require a degree in a related field of the job description. But your point was so good that you made earlier. That degree is taking 4 whole years at university. So by the time 4 years go by, specific niches like the tech niche can change quite a bit in 4 years. So that's where micro credentials can be especially useful and helpful, because then the person who has the degree, who has graduated, can then come up to current and relevancy of the field that he has chosen. To answer your second question, three friends that decide to get the micro credential at the same arena, the same niche, may not work well for them, because if they have a different background, if they have different degrees, then they should focus on their specialty, their own specialty. But, you know, human nature is such that the grass always looks better on the other side. So, you know, it's at the adolescent stage, the confidence perhaps is not there, and the work experience is not there. So they're feeling like, you know, maybe there's safety in numbers. Regardless, we do want to make sure that these micro-credentials are an assessed credential, that it's coming from a credible source. And certainly the quality assurance definitely needs to be there. So you can, you know, just kind of, it's very easy for the human being to say, this is my passion, and this is what I'm credentialed in. But as career practitioners and professionals, we know that people need to go to a credible source for upskilling. And this is for continuous learning, definitely. So this is, micro-credentials are extremely cost-effective training too, because these are small bites of learning, very specific types of learnings that the boss is looking for. Now, my own personal feeling, this is just me now, is I think that the organization itself that has hired people, millennials, but not only that, how about the baby boomers that have been working for a company? They too need to be upskilled. So in my opinion, wouldn't it be nice if their training and development department offered the micro-credentials in what the CEO and the C-suite would like for their company?
Just one question about, there's something that both of you mentioned, and that is, you know, vetting that the micro-credential is from the right. I mean, it's been, what's the word for it? Authorized, or it's like approved by a certain body. So do we know of some such bodies in Asia? Do they go by countries, or are they like international bodies? How do we know that this micro-credential that I'm going for, it's kind of like of high quality?
Yes, that's a really good point. So most of the micro-credentials currently are available online. So the person can go in their specific association. So for example, a doctor can go to the American Medical Association. A dentist can go in the American Dental Association and such. So I can only speak for the Western part, but it is catching on in Asia Pacific area, where they are offering not only online, but they're also offering face-to-face. So the learning component that's virtual is going to be self-paced, whereas the face-to-face is going to be at a specific point in time. The Australian government has really understood this micro-credentialing aspect of for the future. And the micro-credentialing marketplace is what they call it. And so they offer this marketplace in an online platform that will allow users to compare and contrast these short courses and understand how that credit can be used towards qualification. So in 2020, there were 36 out of 42 Australian universities, and this is according to Forbes magazine. So 36 out of 42 Australian universities are in process of or have already developed micro-credentials. And I think that this needs to be the trend that the Australians are putting forth, and they're leading the path for other universities and for other nations to follow suit.
Talking about podcast episodes, did you all find any insight that was shared by the guests come as a surprise for you?
Yes, in the recent podcast episode, season 3, episode 5, there was the topic about supply chain trends and emerging careers. And the discussion on emerging careers and the in-demand skills shed light on the changing dynamics in the industry, providing valuable insights for both professionals and aspiring individuals. And this information is great to understand the evolving trends and emerging careers in various industries, like the new space economy and information technology. And it helps us to provide relevant and timely guidance to students. And key takeaways may include addressing challenges in food production models and exploring non-traditional paths in the industries like space and IT, ensuring our advice remains current and looking in future.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The food was quite a great one. And I had some surprises with the water industry. And I think my takeaway on that was the view of how the industry addresses planetary boundary issues like water pollution and, you know, the acidification, and which will require a lot of new workarounds by that sector. And the unexpected part in particular, I think, was that how the industry experts were talking about resolving the vast problems that they face with, you know, climate change and also increases in prices and resources that had been, you know, we've looked at water as a relatively inexpensive resource for centuries. And now it is so dear to us. We realize that humans have developed on land, we only have 3% of our water sources are on land, where, you know, the rest are oceans. And so it's kind of this wake up call for all of us. And the water industry really propelled me into thinking about just what Lilia was saying, you know, the concepts of technology and how to monitor so many changing things, the internet of the industry, internet of things, the IIoT is very strong.
That's so true. The thing that stood out to me Yes, the water, of course. I mean, this is such an important SDG goal, and just fulfilling the United Nations SDG goals for different nations and focus that different nations have, and water being such an important component in different nations. But the other thing that stood out to me was the partnerships, that not every country has the totality of resources that they need. So partnerships become very, very important. And that's goal number 17, you know, revitalizing global learning. What do we need as the nation that we are physically in, but also caring about the interchange and the intersection of different countries because of diverse resources becomes a very important point this year and this decade. And that's for sustainable development, right? So those sustainable development goals, whether it's for clean water or decent work or good health, this can only be accomplished through a strong commitment, through a collective strong commitment to each other, global partnerships and cooperation and such. And I do want to tie this to the micro-credentialing, because right now in higher education, the students, the parents, and so forth, the mindset is learn to earn. And we need to change that mindset to learn to learn. It's a continuous improvement. And things are changing so rapidly in all corners of the earth. And I think that this micro-credentialing is innovation that works directly with our guests who come here. And all of our guests have mentioned these partnerships as being such a vital component to why we should care, what progress we are making solitarily as well as together to help each other and to reach these goals. And it also asks us to, is what can we do locally, right, that has an impact globally? So we call that global. So I encourage the listeners today, whatever country that you are in, to reach out and to do your part where you are, so that we can all mobilize action, the action and implementation steps.
So this season, we have covered a lot of industries. And as you rightly pointed out, a lot of them are from, they have a focus on SDGs. If we are talking about, you know, the content that we've created, there is actually a lot of content. In your view, how do you think the career practitioners can best use this information in their work? Do you have any suggestions or tips for them?
Well, I would say very quickly, you know, focusing on what's needed in green technologies and micro-credentialing, although, you know, what we just talked about and Sujata, you know, was bringing it together, you know, it's the water industry and the tech industry and how they work together so those kind of and micro-credentialing, so how that would come together. For instance, if I have a psychology major and she has to learn Figma because she has to learn UIX, you know, she wants something in user interface and technology. And so then she follows a path that's quite different than the one she started out on. And maybe she will develop in the more technical side of psychology, but it all relates to this unexpected part. And I think that's building the awareness of the ethics that are coming out in various industries. There's a whole new generation of people looking at being kind of the essential gatekeepers in many, many industries, that I think that's a role that can be played with those. You know, I didn't want to say soft skills because when we're talking about, you know, being able to synthesize information and being able to, you know, those initiative qualities, those are really important skills.
Yes, exactly. Elizabeth, such a great point here for the, you know, soft skills are no longer being called soft skills because people have realized that they aren't durable, but they are absolutely necessary. And thank you for offering, you know, the micro-credentialing and durable skills, those transferable skills, such as EI and empathy and so forth. So, yes, and to just piggyback off of what Elizabeth just said, I think that it's important for listeners to realize that it all starts with the individual. So when we talk about career development, employment counseling, and such, we're talking about three levels: the individual, the team, and the company. So it takes that change readiness, that preparation, that planning on all three levels, and it has to match. So I would encourage millennials, I would encourage listeners to not follow your friend's plan or goals, but to go straight back to the first step of self-assessment and self-discovery. And like Elizabeth said, what is that individual's degree in? Because each degree is going to require a different upskilling, a different micro-credential. So first, going back to assessing and self-discovering the skills, are the interests still the same? Because after the four-year degree, from freshman to senior, the interests may have changed. Right? And we know personality is fluid. That's always changing too. And external factors such as the pandemic and life happenstance can shift somebody's values. So the first thing is always self-discovery, self-assessment. From there, you can go into identifying your research options to see what's out there, what is available in the niche. And then from there, then you can evaluate and prioritize what you have found in the research. Prioritize what you want, what exactly you want. And when you follow such steps, then you would be prepared to try an option, to take that action, right, for the option that you have chosen. So that's at the individual level. At the team level, must do the same thing. We have high functioning teams, and we also have low functioning teams. So again, the self-assessment as a collective team, if they are low functioning. And at the company level, the same thing. What are we doing that's working? What are we doing that's not working? And the millennials are bold. They are speaking up and they're telling everybody the autocratic method that was there in place prior to the pandemic is no longer working for them. It's going to take much more than directives and dictating and so forth. Millennials want to use their creativity. They want a creative work atmosphere, hybrid workforces, and so forth. So it's going to take yet another last step at all three levels. And that's going to be reflection and evaluation. What aspects are working? What's not working? Is it the work itself? Is it the job duties? What may be added? You know, we can always add to existing structures through employee wellness, for example. And, you know, let's make work more enjoyable.
We're running out of time. So just the final question to all three of you. What are your key takeaways from the season? And Lilia, I would like to start with you.
Thank you, Ruchira. Speaking about, again, micro-credentials, it's important to explore micro-credentials that complement the students' career goals and align with the rapidly changing job landscape. And the episodes also of this season highlighted the accessibility of tech careers for non-tech individuals. These insights should significantly impact career guidance approach we use in our work, especially in the unique context of various countries.
Okay, thank you. Yes, it's very exciting what's going on in Central Asia to me. And when I think of what we were talking about this season was in particular, I think there's a re-evolution. So instead of revolution, we're really looking at jobs. And what I mentioned before, the industrial internet of things that include a very big extensive list of companies looking at tech, but also implementing job creation. They are trying to figure that out too. The industries are trying to figure that out along with us. So our millennials are helping with that. I think through anticipatory thinking, that's come out as an evolving landscape in tech careers, really trying to solve, the first thing out of the bag was AI, but then the second thing was ethics and where are we going? And I think those careers can be very much advanced and aligned. And that came out of this industry focus that you've had this season, Ruchira. The last thing is interdisciplinary work and thinking and skilling and that cycle of attracting and nurturing those kinds of people and understanding Amara's law that we tend to overestimate the effect of technology in the short term and underestimate the effect of it in the long run.
Those are such beautiful words. Sujata, any last words on takeaways from your end?
Yes. We have had such wonderful podcast guests that have given such wonderful information about what matters to them. So my takeaway is what matters to other people in other geographical regions of the world. None of us are existing in a vacuum. So we must care and we must elicit empathy because it's so important in understanding each other of what matters, what do they value. And these were my takeaways. I particularly enjoyed Sharath Ram and his mention of we must connect the dots. And when you, when you connect the dots, a beautiful picture emerges, doesn't it? On paper. And that's what we want to do, is to connect the dots. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. We've come to the end of our episode, and I would like to thank Sujata, Lilia, Elizabeth, all of you for your comments. And this was such a wonderful discussion. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.